From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last Wednesday inside City Hall in Rochester, where more than 100 people turned out for a public meeting about Cobbs Hill Village. The project has sparked an emotional debate in the community over the last few months. Here's what you ought to know from the outset here. We'll try to get the details down, and we've got guests on both sides of this who are going to have a lot to say. Developer Rochester Management is proposing a $27 million plan to raise and rebuild the senior housing complex at Cobbs Hill Village, originally built in the 1950s. The plan would expand the development from 60 units to 104. The current units are considered affordable housing for seniors, with all of the units affordable for residents making 50% or less of area median income. With a new project, Rochester Management has agreed to freeze current tenant rates, and in a recent revision to the plans, said it will expand the affordable housing options for future renters. We'll talk about those specifics this hour. But those opposed to the project said they don't want to lose any affordable housing, and some are also concerned about green space in the area and a lot more. So where does the project stand now? City Council has tabled a vote on the redevelopment until further notice, so council members have more time to consider new legislation on the matter. But that hasn't stopped a wave of comments, some concern, some support, people on all sides of the project. We're going to hear some of that this hour. We'll have your questions and comments as well coming up about the plan. Joining us in studio, we're happy to have the CEO of Rochester Management, Peggy Hill. Peggy, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Miriam Zinter, who's a mortgage officer with the Community Preservation Corporation. Miriam was one of what looked to me to be about a dozen signatories to a letter of support for the project that appeared in City newspaper. And Miriam, why don't you tell us a little bit about just your background, because I know you're not technically working with Rochester Management. You live nearby. You're supporting this project.
I'm absolutely supporting this project, Evan. I've been involved with affordable housing for the past 31 years, started as a community organizer, organizing tenants and doing new construction, affordable new construction, worked for Mayor Johnson as senior housing developer, and have done everything from advocating for affordable housing to, in my current position, financing affordable housing units. CPC is not financing the construction nor the permanent loan for this project, but I thought that it would be important to get involved because CPC's mission is to support safe, decent, and affordable housing throughout all of our communities for the benefit of low and working families,
okay,
low-income and working families.
Also with us is Lee Sengbush, who is the president of the Cobbs Hill Village Tenants Association. Lee, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us is Richard Rosen, an architect who I've heard many times on the phone when we talk about development around Rochester. Nice to see you in person. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
How did you get involved in this particular debate?
I live in the neighborhood, and for 25 years, I was president of Tempro Development Company, which was an arm of Temple Brith Kodesh, and we own the 11 emergency shelters in single-family homes that we own, something that happens to be unique in the country, to provide housing for homeless families. We house about 160 a year. So I was the developer to build those houses coming through the years and now administering them. I'm no longer the president. I've retired from that. So I'm very much involved with people of extremely low income. Those are the people I've been dealing with, and those are the people I'm concerned about here. And I'll explain when we get to it why the proposed new project will not serve people with extremely low incomes.
All right. So let's start with the CEO of Rochester Management, Peggy Hill. Why don't you outline the project as it is currently planned? And tell us for our listeners, and by the way, I should back up and say, for our listeners who think, well, this is just one project, 60, 100 units in Rochester, does it impact me? This has been one of the really heated debates in the city because it is kind of a microcosm of the kinds of debates that appear in a lot of places about what's the right kind of development, does it fit within the community, does it serve low-income housing, what does low-income truly mean? And so, Peggy, why don't you give us a sense for what is there now at Cobbs Hill Village and what this proposal entails, and then we'll talk about where we might have some difference of opinion or disagreement. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, just as a little background, Rochester Management's a nonprofit. We've been serving the most vulnerable in Rochester for close to 70 years. We provide a solid foundation for people in which to grow their lives, providing quality, affordable housing. You know, we provide communities where they can find stability and are treated with respect by our housing staff who genuinely care. This is our mission. We care about people, and that's why we're in this challenging project. We welcome all people. We know that diverse communities are healthy and stable neighborhoods, and that's exactly what we have in our portfolio. So several years ago, we noticed that our waiting lists were growing, especially for senior housing, and we worked with SWB Architects to look at this site in particular, because we knew that these units had outlived their useful life. As with many of the units within the Mitchell-Lama portfolio, which is now a focus of the governor's new housing program, they need help. We can see now there are no real accessibility features within the units now for people with mobility challenges. There's poor air circulation, very little natural light. They tend to be damp. They're built with concrete masonry, just the cinder block look, so they look a bit institutional also. They really aren't energy efficient, and functionally they're basically obsolete. So we really looked at this site in terms of expanding there. We met with city departments along the way to review ideas, but at that time there was no available funding. It wasn't until just a few years ago where the governor of our state came out with his really historic five-year housing program, creating $2.5 billion in housing funds to not only expand the affordable housing, but also to address these troubled Mitchell-Lama housing stock as well. And as I noticed in a discussion before we started, there's a lot of reference to preserving Mitchell-Lama. I mean, a big focus of that is really not renovations per se, but making sure those housing stock does not get removed from Mitchell-Lama, which is affordable, and get pushed into the market rate housing that has happened on other projects. So we're a firm believer that the Mitchell-Lama is a great program to be in. We're heavily supervised by the state. Any rent increases there are always dictated by the state of New York. And we have every intention to remain within that program. With this, we've worked hard and long with the state. We've toured the facility with the state. They're on board with us. They see also that there are real needs at the current facility. So we've designed a program that continues this current community, which is diverse, and also serves many income levels, from extremely low income to low income, and that's exactly what we plan to do going forward, while also expanding the stock of affordable housing and starting to hit that waiting list by adding 44 units.
Okay, so let me work through a couple questions I have just on how this is going to function. So you're going to raise the current structure, right, and then rebuild, is that right?
What happens is it's phased in three parts to create as little disturbance to our existing residents. That's another thing with if you're looking at renovating, looking at concrete masonry building, also concrete slab roofs and floors, it'd not only be very inefficient, impractical to do a renovation, where on earth would we put these people? So this project is phased into three phases. We have space to create one building of 37 units. We will remove three buildings that house 30 residents today. They'll move right into the new units. And each phase will take care of the next layer of people so that each resident will only have to move once. They'll be fully supported by us in terms of talking about the move, planning the move, providing a move coordinator, and also professional movers to help them move into the new facility.
So it's not a case of raise the current building, the people who live there have to go live somewhere else, then build new, and then they move in.
Absolutely not.
Okay. And when it comes to the rates, we hear a lot about frozen rates. And help me see if this is right or wrong, because in any time you got a project like this, I'm sure, Peggy, as you know, the community starts talking and some information is good, some is not good. So help me see if this is true. The current rate, if I'm a current resident there, I'm paying X. Under the new structure, I'm going to pay the same? You're going to freeze the rate? You're not going to raise it for me?
Absolutely, and that's including the existing utilities as well. So
okay.
If you live there today, you'll move into your new unit with assistance, moving assistance and all that, and you'll pay the same rent, including existing utilities, for as long as you live at that site.
If I pass away, if I move, if I choose not to live there anymore, the next person who lives in that unit will pay a higher rate? Is that true or not?
Well,
true?
First of all, if we have some people that decide to go to assisted living between now and the time the project's complete, we will backfill that unit so that we have 60 spots that move into the new unit at the same rates. Then if those existing residents over time leave,
yeah,
we will fill that unit and continue that low rent for the 15-year period.
For a 15-year period?
Yes.
So it's not just a case of the current tenant will get the same rate until they're out of that building. It's 15 years of fixed.
Correct.
And then the rates will change.
For those 60 units. However, to make it even more complex, 20 of the lowest units, which pretty much relates to all of the studios, 16 studios and 4 of the 1 bedrooms, will remain at those current rates for the entire 40-year period. The 40-year period relates to the reversion period, and it also refers to a state-mandated mandated regulatory agreement, which locks in this affordability. It ensures that this is sustainable, affordable housing for 40 years.
Okay. And are you concerned that this, all, another word that comes up that I hear from critics is gentrification. Is this a project that gentrifies?
Not at all. I mean, we're increasing the affordable units. We're not decreasing affordable units at all. And we're serving, today we serve a wide band. I think a lot of the misinformation that's out there is that we are serving people that are almost homeless. That's not true. We serve a wide band of incomes, anywhere from 30% AMI to 80%.
Okay. So. Well, let me turn to Lee Sengbush then, because he's the president of the Cobbs Hill Village Tenants Association. And why don't you walk me through the concerns that you have with this, and let me know if what you're hearing from the CEO lines up with the project as you understand it.
Sure. The first thing I want to say is just on behalf of the tenants there that we love it there. And just as an example, picture last night, it was a beautiful evening here in Rochester. And I came home and across the way I saw somebody sitting outside, went over and sat with them. We watched other people come in. They came over, said hello. It's a very open, connected environment. And what we hear is people do not want to live in an apartment building and change all that. It's a very different environment. And we love it the way it is. The two things I'd like to address of concern, first of all, a simple one about how to, if we renovate the existing apartments where we're at, I've heard from people that are involved with this on a continuous basis that it's very easy. It's as simple as opening up a vacant apartment, take one person, move them into that for a short while they redo their apartment, then move them back into their apartment. Then take the next person, move them into that vacant apartment, and keep switching apartment by apartment, and it's done very easily. The second thing is the concern for the condition of the apartments. And this I couldn't disagree with anymore. I lived there 4 years, and when Peggy first came and told us, boy, we're going to have to knock these down and build the new ones. There's no way we can renovate that. And they keep saying that continually. And I've kept asking from the beginning, as my other neighbors have. We've looked at each other and gone, wait a minute, these look like they're in great shape. Is there something behind the walls that we don't see? And we keep asking. All the words I hear are general words. We want specifics. What is broken that can't be fixed? And we've worked with other folks, fellow right next to me, Richard Rosen here, who has done an in-depth study of, and it's very simple, obvious things, that everything that needs to be done, including handicap accessibility, can easily be done and is done around the country. And we'd like that and to stay where we are.
Okay, so real briefly here, Peggy, can I just ask a couple point by point? Let's start with handicap accessibility. If you really wanted to do that, currently at Cobbs Hill, could you do that? What I just heard from Lee is not untrue. I mean, we see old movie theaters do handicap accessibility. We do structures all the time that happens. Could that happen at Cobbs Hill?
Unfortunately, and let me back up a little bit, I just want to stress, I appreciate your opinions, Lee, and you know we've never spoken for our residents, but I do want to say that there are many other residents there that are very excited about the project, very, very excited. So I just want to preface with that. But obviously, we appreciate everyone's opinion. No, we feel that it really can't easily be converted to handicap accessibility because we just toured it with the Center for Disability Rights. They're completely on board with this. For example, touring it, someone that has challenges can't even come in the front door. And from
that's
there,
right now. Well, could you retrofit it? Could you change it?
We really
it?
Couldn't. I mean, the you units are it. Just too small. If you look at a studio unit of 378 square feet, it's small. Again, as I stress again, we're dealing with difficult building materials
okay.
as well.
Okay. And so you said Center for Disability Rights supports you in that decision.
Absolutely.
Okay. Richard?
Well, the Center for Disability Rights wasn't given the opportunity to view the plans that I prepared and cost estimates with them that indicate that half or a quarter of the units could be made fully accessible, meeting the current ANSI codes for accessibility, at a cost of between $35,000 and $50,000 a unit. Therefore, for a $2 million rehab grant, instead of a $27 million new mortgage, these units could be made handicap accessible so people can age in place. Your architect has had very little experience doing this sort of thing. I've been designing apartments. I've designed over 1,000 for seniors, for the developer for whom it's my principal employer, for 20 years now. And I'm quite certain that the amount that the all of the doorways can be widened, etc. Showers can be installed to replace tubs. All of the things necessary for handicap accessibility can be done. And if you want to be generous, for a budget of $50,000 per unit, including the step at the front door, etc., etc. So you have not asked. You've never made direct contact with the Tenants Association and their consultants to be able to evaluate our reply. And you have only turned to your own paid architect because we believe you really want to do a new project.
Okay. That couldn't be further from the truth, Richard, on so many levels. I don't even know where to begin with that. We have had numerous meetings with our tenants, our residents, with officials at the state who have far more experience in affordable housing than you do, Richard. I believe a lot of your experience was with market rate senior housing, beautiful, luxurious senior housing. And I am quite sure that you allowed for handicap accessibility and simple basic amenities like gathering space. But yet here, in a situation where we're dealing with low-income people, they aren't entitled to get this. I mean, let's be honest here. This project is necessary because the seniors deserve it. We have people that have worked in the neighborhood, served all of us in this neighborhood, and they deserve to live in a better living situation. You know, let's not mask this why, well, there's a different, cheaper way to do this. And this, I mean, there's a lot of NIMBY in this project. It's out there on the table. Let's just say what it is. Obviously, we would not ever undertake a project of this magnitude. And believe you me, we're nonprofit. There's no developer fees. There's no other agenda other than to serve seniors like we've done for 70 years. Do you honestly think we would take on a challenging project like this, enjoying all of this controversy for years without discussing this with our supervisory agency, their architects, engineers? That would just be silly. Honestly, we all have full-time jobs aside from this project. If there was a simpler way to do it, Richard, believe me, we would be all on board with it, but there is not.
Go ahead, Richard.
You've never invited us to a meeting to explain our side, what plans we have and why we could do it. You're designing this from the top down. You know, when I went to planning school at Harvard, it was about 5 years after this project was built. And what was explained to me is that there are two ways you can be a planner. One, you can decide that you know better and that you know what's good for your clients. That's the Robert Moses style. He was tearing things down like crazy at the time. The other is to simply listen. So the first thing I did when I got involved with this was to ask the Tenants Association, the president is sitting here, Lee, now. They polled their residents and they decided that the concept of individual cottages opening on a sidewalk with at least 15 feet of the grass between that and the parking that's there, gave them the dignity and feeling of security that they had when they had a single family home before they were forced to move due to a change in their circumstances. That's why they love it. We call them cottages. And there's a 6-foot sidewalk connecting all the units and it's completely roofed. It's virtual front porch. They sit outside, they talk to each other, they read the paper in the morning, they speak to each other, they see what each other are doing. There's a tremendous public safety aspect. We looked over the police records over 50 years. There's hardly ever been any crime here. They're afraid of moving into a department house where they will lose their identity and they won't meet other people. Do you really think that having a private patio, a private balcony, is going to help seniors socialize, avoid the depression that comes from loneliness, as opposed to this configuration? They value this configuration in the beautiful tree, 100-year-old trees surrounding the buildings.
All right, so let's let Peggy respond to that. Go ahead, Peggy.
Well, again, I think I appreciate your opinion, Richard, but that's what it is. I think we heard from many of our existing residents that have spoken at numerous, we've been at this for 2 years, public meetings that are happy to get up there and share how excited they are about having a change, having a community room where we can bring in activities, a balance class, cooking class, anything from music, bringing in music to activities that they'd like to do on their own, maybe have a family party in a bigger space, outdoor patios for exercise and gathering, many things. I think one key here is yes, I understand, Richard, you've done a review, but I think one of the key problems with that review is it's not objective. It's just not. You're coming from a different place. We have a lot of experience. We serve thousands of seniors every year, every day. We know what people like and want. We talk with people. We've talked to our residents. We didn't have studios in this initially. Some people said they would prefer to have studios. They didn't want an extra room to clean. We incorporated that into the architecture plan.
Is your position that you're the only objective one at the table, Peggy?
No, not at all.
That's sort of the implication you just gave.
No, I'm speaking to Richard.
Okay, but
he's very opinionated.
But nobody's objective here. I mean, everybody has an idea for what they think is best, and I understand the point here. And listeners, we got our phones are going off the hook here. We're going to work through your feedback in the second half hour. I do want to ask Lee, to the point that Peggy's raising, is that they've talked to people who live in these units.
Yes.
And that there's going to be disagreement, but Peggy's saying, we understand largely what people want and need.
No, I disagree with that completely. There's only a handful of people that are saying, we want the new places. And to quote them, they say, heck, I'm going into a brand new place for the same price. That's great. Why wouldn't I say no? They have no interest in other people. I don't see them outside very much. And may just say the fact that we know those people, handful of people, are being given gift certificates and given limo rides down to speak and free lunches. Why would you have to do that if they agreed to do that? We're not doing that with
Lee, that's
people.
A pretty big allegation.
It's definitely not true. And let's back up a little bit here, Lee. We had a city meeting, series of meetings, after meeting with resident or neighborhood groups for 9 months, where the city occupied those meetings also. We also had resident meetings, and the city assigned a mediator to sit in on that meeting, and she made sure that every single resident at the group spoke, and the majority of the people were in favor of it. She also was very effective in bringing out reasons why people might not want to be on it, and every opinion was respected. To sit there and say that people don't want this is just not accurate. And to say, to accuse us of bribery, that's just offensive.
Well, that's a fact. I wouldn't be saying it this
obviously.
Well,
it's not a fact.
Okay. I will say, as the journalist and the host of this program, I don't have evidence that supports Lee's claim there, and I haven't looked into that. But I understand there's a lot of heat on both sides of this. And before we get to some of your calls, I want to ask just a question based on an email I got from Candace, who was saying that let me read Candace's emails, because it at the core of this, for a lot of our listeners and people who've been following this debate, it's the question of what affordable is. But maybe that's not as central as perhaps we thought. What I'm hearing from Richard and from Lee is that a lot of the people who are there like the space now, and they feel they're being pushed into a change that they don't want. And I'm hearing from Peggy that they don't think that that's the case at all, and that these changes are necessary based on an outdated and obsolete set of living arrangements. So Candace writes to the program and says, as just one of the comments from Rochester Management, they didn't agree to freeze rents. They were legally required to keep low-income rents the same for the life of the current tenants, and after that, all bets are off. That's from Candace.
Absolutely false. We are not required to do anything. Absolutely. And this is the most frustrating part of this project, are these attacks on Rochester Management, a nonprofit that's been serving thousands of people every year. We have no financial gain in this project whatsoever. We are doing this because it's mission-driven work at great cost to the organization out of our own operations. Absolutely not is it required.
Okay. Richard and Lee, do you see any concern about this changing the overall scope of being for low-income seniors?
Yes, and we have to get those facts and figures out. The present rents, 30 of the 60 units, rent for $327 a month, and the other 30 rent for $507 a month. That is affordable to people with incomes of $13,000 and $20,000 a year. The profile of rents in the proposed project goes all the way up to incomes of $100,000 a year, which is seven times the rents you proposed. You proposed rents of $1,950 for a two-bedroom townhouse with both bedrooms on the second floor with just a walk-up. You have 16 of those. The rent is $1,950. When you add the utilities, which is required, you are still within 80% of moderate income. But someone could live in that apartment with an income seven times that rent, and that happens to be $100,000 a year. This is tax-exempt property. We're with rents proposed, which are higher than those in the neighborhood, actually.
You are
$2,000 a month is higher than those in the neighborhood.
All right, Richard, let's let the CEO.
Therein lies the problem, okay? Therein lies the problem. It's absolutely incorrect.
What's incorrect about those numbers? Help us.
Well, where do I start? The numbers, the rents. First of all, we currently serve, don't get the rents confused with the income levels. We currently serve people in the income range of 30% AMI to 80%. Going forward, we will serve people from 30% to 80%. There was another thing that was completely wrong about the income limits going forward being something like $100,000. We are serving people from 30% AMI, which is currently $15,550, and the maximum is 80%, which is $41,450. Now note, there are only ever going to be 24 units at the 80% AMI. 80% AMI is what the state and HUD considers low income. That's the program that we're in. I know you'd like us to flip this to be extremely low income for all the units. That's just not possible. We're not a public housing authority.
It's possible if you leave the project alone and don't tear it down.
No, it's not.
Okay, let me ask you, Peggy. There are currently 60 units, correct?
Correct.
And were Richard's figures correct on 30 of the 60 are $327 a month, 30 are at $507 a month? Is that correct?
332 and 508.
332 and 508. Mm-hmm. Okay. So half of the current tenants are paying 332 and half are paying 508.
Correct. Regardless of their income, yes.
And that's a total of 60 units. There's going to be 104 units going forward here. How does it break down for that 104 then? How many are going to pay 332? How many are going to pay 508? How many are going to pay more?
Okay. Well, the 16 studios will always pay 332.
Okay.
I mean, that's going to be for the 40 years. And at project completion, we will wind up having 30 units at the 30% AMI. We'll have 42 units at 52%. We'll have 8 units at 60% and 24 units at 80%. And let me just stress.
Can you do that in the monthly rates? Can you do that for me in monthly rates right now?
Sure.
Yeah.
332.
Yep.
There are 508. There's 30 at 508, 12 at 576, 4 at 715, 4 at 850, 4 at 925, and 20 at 1170. And those max out, the 1170 maxes out at the 80% AMI. One critical point here to make is that, and this is true of all affordable housing developments other than public housing authorities, is it is imperative to have a good mix of affordable ranges. We find it's really helpful and keeps the community very diverse, inclusive, and stable to have a mix of affordable incomes. So it's a wide range from 30 to 80. Another important point is having a small piece of those units at 80%, the 24 units today and always, also helps us keep the smaller units at lower rates. It pays more, a bigger chunk of the operating expenses. So that is a key piece in this. It's not that we're being arbitrary in these unit counts and percentages of AMI. A lot of work has been done studying market studies by a professional appraiser.
And this is where I want to ask Miriam Zinter, who's done some work as a mortgage officer with the Community Preservation Corporation and supports this project. From your perspective, is Peggy Hill accurate there, saying that, look, if you want to preserve the lowest of the low-income affordability, you need some in a little bit higher range to kind of create that mix?
Well, I think many studies, and I think, Richard, you could even agree on this, that having housing with economic diversity as well as ethnic diversity always just produces a richer community. Mm-hmm. So when you have people, and we're retaining the very low rates, which is fantastic, but allowing just taking all the very low-income people and putting them into one place and saying, well, that's where the poor people live.
I don't agree
never
with you
a good
because
idea.
This is part of a neighborhood.
It
the
is
balance,
part of a community.
The diversity is part of the neighborhood. We have friends who live there. We talk to them. We visit them. The diversity comes in the neighborhood, not necessarily in one small pocket project.
There's diversity in the neighborhood, but when you walk through this area, the apartment complex is fairly isolated. You've got the tennis courts on one side, you've got the baseball diamond, you've got Lake Riley, you've got the wooded hill area with the telephone tower, you've got some walking paths. But when you talk about the housing in Cobbs Hill and when you go through Washington Grove, those houses are fairly separate, and you're right. They're high-income people who are living in those areas. But this community is a little bit isolated. And when we've looked at communities of housing, having economic diversity is imperative. But my one question with this project is, why this project? Why is it when we look at redoing other affordable projects, they don't become this I don't know, divisive or
a lightning rod.
And the only thing I can think of is that this is surrounded by higher net worth individuals. This is a beautiful pastoral setting. And it makes me feel that some people, and not you guys, of course, but some people feel some kind of way about it. And I've read a lot of people's comments about why they don't think that this project should even be here, because it is a beautiful site. And some people feel that people who are in affordable housing need not have a beautiful and pastoral setting as what is currently here.
Can I respond to that in a minute?
And so I think it's very important to be supportive of affordable housing and affordable housing projects that are in inclusive communities and in beautiful communities such as Cobbs Hill Village.
Let me let Lee respond. I want to pin one other point down on just the rent numbers, and then I got to take some of your phone calls because everyone in Rochester is calling the program today, which just means everyone's listening. That's nice. Lee, go ahead.
Just want to say I've lived there 4 years, and talk about going, a lot of my friends, we go over to Park Avenue. We have friends all around the area. We go over to Wegmans a lot. And in those 4 years, talking to all the people in the coalition, the opposition, I have never heard anybody say that they don't want the low-income people there. And I haven't heard anybody indirectly telling me about somebody saying that. I've only heard it from people that have no evidence of that. I hear loving people that love us there, and they want us to be happy there.
Okay, and to the point that there was some discrepancy, Peggy Hill saying that the highest rent number, if I had it correct, about 20 units, that's about one-fifth of the units there, are going to be $1,170 a month. Is that correct, Peggy?
Correct.
Okay, and that's the high number. Richard, your high number you presented was $1,950.
No, that was incorrect. $1,266 with utilities is the correct number for the rent that Peggy said. I'm sorry, I made a mistake when that first number I threw
out. Okay.
$1,266 and the maximum income permitted to occupy that two-story townhouse is $96,600. And that is tax-exempt land in the middle of the park. And I'm saying that incomes of $96,600 is way over the median income of people who live in the surrounding neighborhoods.
Okay. And Peggy, can we clarify your response to that there? Do you think Richard is making a fair point on that high-end number being over the median locally?
No, I'm not. I'm referring back to the facts, which is 80% AMI. And the income limit is $41,450.
That obscures the issue. The real rents and the real incomes are numbers people can understand. You obscure the issue by talking about different levels of affordability. $96,000, $600, that person's going to be able to stay in that apartment for as long as they like, seven times income.
Richard, you're using the antiquated method of Mitchell Lama rent housing. I mean, are you kidding? You're looking at how it is today. Today, yes, people can stay. Not under the new program. Under the new program, as you look, it's all tied to AMI bands. We cannot let anyone move into a unit below.
I didn't say move in. Stay.
Whatever.
As long as they're paying seven times their income, they can
stay. No, don't worry.
We don't
have anybody in that bucket right now anyway. But the issue here is it's different going forward. Everybody is going to have to be tied to those specific income level bands. Every year, as it is today, they do income affidavits. The income is verified and checked, notarized, and so forth. So, no, you're not going to have a unit with somebody making, you know, $86,000.
Okay. So, listeners, I'm going to go to your phone calls. There's a lot of feedback. Take some of your emails as well. You just heard Peggy Hill, who is the CEO of Rochester Management. Miriam Zinter here, a mortgage officer with the Community Preservation Corporation. Richard Rosen is an architect. Lee Sengbush, president of the Cobbs Hill Village Tenants Association. Let me get some of your phone calls. This is Rosa in Rochester. Go ahead, Rosa. Hi, Rosa. Are you there? Lost you, Rosa. Let's go ahead now and grab Bill in Rochester next. Go ahead, Bill.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on some things that I've observed in these protests against this project, and that these people claim that they care for the low-income housing, but their whole motive is to get all housing out of Cobbs Hill Park by 2041.
Say again? I don't think I understand.
The motive of the opposition groups is to eliminate all the housing at Cobbs Hill Park by 2041.
Thank you, Bill.
They claim that
In 2041, the project will revert to the City of Rochester, and the City Council at that time could decide to take the project and offer it to the Housing Authority to operate. The Housing Authority would be delighted to take it and operate it in 2041. Nobody's talking about removing it. We're talking about not extending the reversion date 20 years to 2061.
Richard, actually, people have talked about moving it. I'm sorry, Miriam. Go ahead and jump in if you like.
That is, it is correct.
Public meetings constantly.
Bill is correct. In a Democrat and Chronicle article, the group specifically, and I made a copy of it, specifically said that they wanted it to revert back to the city because they felt that it should go back to complete park land, and they wanted to have the units taken down. And that's where I came in with, I'm wondering why this project is such a lightning rod. And I don't like it when people say, well, these houses should be taken down when the reverter deed comes
to an
end.
Can I answer to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Leo.
That when the project first started and the coalition came in, they didn't see anything else and they didn't know about the whole situation. And their first reaction was, oh my gosh, you're going to put these ridiculous four-story buildings in a park. That's not done any place around the country. So their reaction was, in 2041, if these buildings are old, they can be taken down and can go back to parkland. It's changed drastically. That's way, way out of date. The people that I'm working with want us to stay there, and with the renovations, these buildings can stay long after 2041, and they fit in very nicely, and that fits in with everybody.
This is one place where I think our guests agree. They think there should be housing there of some kind. It does sound. But Chris on Twitter says, would you ask why anyone thinks they have a right to live in a public park? Cobbs Hill is a local gem that is underutilized regardless of what housing is there, and it could be so much more.
I'll jump in there. So historically, we've actually looked at the historical documents just to see how this came to be, and it was determined that that strip of land wasn't valuable as parkland, and that's how it became deeded to be housing. First, it was housing POWs, and now it was deeded to be senior affordable housing, and that's exactly what we plan to do. And, you know, to go back one comment is, you know, the argument that it shouldn't be there at all, obviously, is alive and well by this comment, and also as recent as last Wednesday's public hearing. We are constantly hearing people say, oh, great project, but move it downtown. Move them here. One of the local neighborhood groups that we're working with initially in front of people in City Hall, thankfully, said, why don't you move it to an abandoned industrial site across from East High and move all your residents that are there with you, build there. That's unacceptable.
Well, Jason writes to us and says, this is not a great location for senior housing at all. There's very little within walking distance, and the nearest corner store and bus stop are half a mile away. Is that true, guys?
It's true. And if this was a brand new application to Mitchell Lama, I think it would have failed because of the location characteristics. There's no bus line nearby. It's an extremely long walk up a hill to get to the bus line. So this would not be approved if it were not being an existing project.
I'm sure that's not true, actually.
There's not a bus line on Culver Road right near Trotta?
That's a walk.
No.
Well, no, there's no bus on Culver Road.
Fortunately, what we have done as part of this project is we've agreed to put in an ADA handicap accessible walk, not just for our folks, but extending all the way down to Culver, so that moms walking their kids in strollers will now actually have a sidewalk to walk down to attend the playground. And we've also met three times with RTS and asking them to give us the cost of a route deviation so that they could swing by there, saying that if they could accommodate that, we'd be certain to create the proper curbs, cutouts, and bus stop if they're able to do that. We haven't heard back because, as we
well,
all know,
just so happens that RTS's Bill Carpenter will be on the show 8 days from now.
And perfect.
I'll ask him, Peggy.
I know they're in the middle of their rollout of new plans.
There you go. All right.
All right, Evan, we've got you down for that.
But the groups who are on the program today, the CEO of Rochester Management and the opposition to this, are largely outside of this argument that there shouldn't be housing there at all. It's a question of, is the current setup renovatable, I think I just invented a word, or is this going to really serve low income, and is this the best way to do that? Let's go ahead and get back to your phone calls. Rosa's back. Go ahead, Rosa.
Oh, hi. This is Rosa.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm in favor of the building, and I've been at Capsule now for 8 years, and I've been very happy with the management, and I do believe the buildings are getting old. There is a lot of issues that it would enhance the lives of us seniors. I'm 67. There's much older people that live there that need different, you know, accessible, handicap accessible wheelchairs if they continue to stay there. And I just believe that Rochester Management has done more than anybody. Well, I don't know much about buildings, but they've gone way out of their way to appease everybody involved. And I think the opposition group is just angry because they want their privacy, get into their little apartments. They don't want to deal with people in the hallways. I think they don't even say hi to me, some of them. They just go right into their little condos, they call them. And that's the way they want to leave them. This is mine. Don't walk in here. Don't even walk by. There's a lot of selfishness that I, as a European-born person, do not understand.
Can I respond to some of that? Rosa, how you doing, Rosa? This is Lee, you know, neighbor down the way. And I just want to let you know that we have on the first survey asking if people wanted to stay in place, that your signature's on that for wanting things to be staying the same.
That was a long time ago. Sorry.
And it had the wrong rents on it too, Lee. It had the wrong rents on the top of it.
I got scared because I'm, as a senior, don't like change. And like I was saying, the apartments are beautiful. I've been happy. It was a shock to many people, including myself, to think, oh boy, I got to move. Well, it was a shock to many people, and as time went on and I learned about what's going on, I was happy to say, sure, I'll go for a nice new apartment. Sure, I'll be more safe because I'm the first apartment. I get all the traffic from the basketball courts. They just redid the whole basketball court, and in the summer, I can assure.
Oh, we lost you, Rosa. But anyway, thanks for the phone call. Anything else you want to respond to there, Lee?
Just in terms of safety, that's another thing we've investigated. And when people have stairways and front doors and the thing where you push a button to get in and people say that's safe to keep people out, everybody in apartment buildings say people can go down that and push all the buttons and somebody will let them in. And the activity in the hallways and the stairwells is not safe. We don't have that now. We don't believe it would be as safe.
Okay. Anything you want to add there, Peggy?
Yeah, I would ensure. I just want to assure you that it is. We manage many, including new facilities, and having the fob that allows entrance in for you and also having the ability for you to control who is allowed into the building. Anyone that's coming into the building will be known. So I think you'll be pleased to see the enhancements.
Yes, you will
there.
Know who the perpetrator is after the crime has been committed. It's safe now, and the police blotter proves it.
The nice thing is, too, is, you know, we have a lot of senior women that live in the property, and having them open the building or their door right into the parking lot can be kind of scary sometimes.
I was going to say, from a woman's point of view, having to open your front door just right into the parking lot, I wouldn't like that. As a person who's becoming of a certain age and looking to where she wants to move to, I would feel personally safer in an apartment building that's more secure, that has a lobby, that has neighbors directly next door where key fob entry is and where there's security.
Right now we have people watching across to see people coming in and out of their apartments.
Everybody's
the new
got
one,
a different
you'll still
idea.
Be going out of your apartment building into the parking lot with the same situation.
But it's a different thing from somebody ringing the bell and you just opening the door to a stranger. If I'm up in my apartment and I have somebody buzzing and I could see who they are or I could hear who they are, they tell me who they are, and I choose to buzz them in, that's very different from somebody knocking on my door and me just opening the
door. Peephole and chain on the door is what hundreds of millions of people in America have with their own homes. This is exactly the same.
The chain? That doesn't work at all. That's how all those women got raped years ago, having the chain on the door. The chain on the door, do not give a woman that advice for the chain on the door. That can get kicked in very quickly.
I said peephole. You can inspect visually who's there.
I think we can improve
things. Oh, peephole. I'm sorry. I thought
okay.
It was peephole.
Okay, let's get back to your phone calls. Richard in Rochester next. Go ahead, Richard. Is that you, Richard? Someone else on line one. Richard, are you there? We don't have Richard. Let me go to Bonnie next on the phone. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, I was at the public hearing meeting the other day, and this is, you know, one of those situations I think that First of all, the affordable housing definition gets kind of gray in some of these things. Years ago, the housing systems, let's just call them, you know, there was a thing called low-income housing, moderate-income housing, and because of some of the thoughts about having mixed incomes, pretty much the low-income housing, which was mainly public, got kind of, shall we say, screwed. I mean, people don't even know that that probably is the case. So there's understandable this, that people, when you see some of these units being townhouses and stuff, and the affordable income being able to be go up some, is that people, you know, they'll start a lot more people, oh, I want to live there too, and pretty soon it'll become more middle class than for low-income people or moderate-income people. So that's one of the things. But the other thing I think that perhaps even greater, although both are important, is that, you know, if you look at the list of who supported this and who didn't, almost every not-for-profit agency supported it. The list, which was longer, of the neighborhood groups were against it. What does that say in addition to what you hear people who live there say? I think there's fear of that these, you know, even the taller buildings are going to not be as tall as they originally were, I guess. But, you know, if you look at some of the stuff, it does kind of block the sense you're in a park, which is one of the things they want to maintain a lot. Understandably, who wouldn't want it? That's a nice place to live. Why should that be disrupted by some, you know, structure? The other thing, though, is that there's a sense of community with this. And people in neighborhoods might be responding in support is because that's a big problem. You know, we took downtown and we did investments all over the place, and people didn't feel, as you can see by Parcel 5, people don't feel they're often part of something that they still want to value. People who live in poor neighborhoods, a lot of times they also surprise people and say, well, if you just redo that place or help me get it repaired, I want to stay here. I think there should have been much more effort in seeing about the honest repairs of some of the problems than just to go directly to this other model. So thank you.
Bonnie, thank you. Well, you know, on the subject of repairs, we've talked about what the Center for Disability Rights said about sort of retrofitting. But what about the rest of it? If you missed it earlier this hour, CEO of Rochester Management, Peggy Hill, said it wasn't just retrofitting for people with disabilities. It was a number of other things. You said the apartments don't have a lot of natural light, that they are damp, that they are essentially obsolete.
I can address to that.
Well, go ahead, Lee, because that's one point that you didn't address earlier, and then we'll let Peggy respond. Go ahead, Lee.
And initially what the caller was saying, with a project like this, if it's one that the tenants like and the public likes, the people come to the tenants and the public to get input. They have charrettes where they have input. Rochester Management did not do that, and I can see for what good reason. They came to us and said, this is what you want. You want dishwashers. You want exercise rooms. And we're looking at each other, the tenants, going, no, we don't want these things. We haven't been asked. So I want to get that clear. Then in terms of the renovations, again, in the beginning, we've heard these fuzzy words of they can't be fixed up. We want specifics, and I've asked from the beginning, and my other tenants have, tell us what is structurally wrong. Give us the specifics. This is simple. And they have given us nothing. So we went and had Richard here do an in-depth study, and it's clear, simple things. And now I'll go down the list. As far as handicap accessibility, they can raise the sidewalks so we don't have that little ledge to get in. The inside doorways can be made larger. They can change the bathrooms so that wheelchairs can get in. As far as the humidity, I'm fine with it. I have windows front and back. I put a fan in it. I don't even have an air conditioning. We can put in air conditioners if we want. I don't care to do it. What we do need is some exhaust fans. These are easy to do, to put in the bathroom, to pull the damp air out of the bathroom. We won't have any mildew problem. Then in terms of some of the appliances are out of date, well, gosh, everybody updates their appliances. But as far as the structure, there's nothing that needs to be done. There's not a lot of electrical outlets. They can put in additional electrical outlets. The heater, we have, actually it's so warm in the winter, a lot of people have their windows open because there isn't a regulator. For what, $50? They can change the regulators. Simple little things, but the units are solid, and we'd love to hear any evidence that that's not true. All the evidence is they can be rebuilt and maintained.
We're down to our last couple minutes, and we'll give the CEO a chance to respond to that. Go ahead, Peggy.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not accurate. And, you know, this, again, it's a kind of off-the-cuff remark about how simple it is to fix something, which isn't a simple solution. I mean, you can't just widen the doorway and then create large enough turning radius in the bathroom and kitchen for a wheelchair. The space just isn't there. You can't add a bathroom fan and expect the air quality in the whole unit to be much better than it is today, and it needs to be done. You're not addressing other things that are just
Could you add electrical outlets?
It would be difficult. We're dealing with cinder block walls, masonry concrete walls.
And
have a lot of conduit all over the room?
Couldn't do fans in the bathroom?
It would not address the rest of the apartment. It wouldn't address address the size of the unit either. The sizes of the units are completely out of date.
You're saying, Richard, it would address it?
I will show you the diagrams afterwards. We can get all of the required movements that are the ANSI instructions for how to make a unit handicap accessible. You're just wrong. You're not an architect. You haven't examined it. You never asked to see it. That's the important thing.
They have architects on staff, though, Richard.
But they told them they've told them what they want to do: plan a new building. They have never asked the architect to study and present to the tenants.
We have had 2 years of meetings with the public, with neighborhood groups, with residents,
and you never considered the existing.
Richard, I don't even know what plan you're referring to. You've never reached out to us with a plan, and on the contrary, we've done changes in response to neighborhood groups' requests. We've done changes in response to a very lengthy planning commission review approval process to the tune of $5.2 million. Tell me how we could be more open to input.
Okay, so you're saying Richard hasn't, we got to wrap, but you're saying Richard hasn't reached out with a plan? How about now? Would you take a look at Richard's plan now if he presents it to you?
Oh, we'll look at it.
Okay, well, we have a start there. And going forward, my understanding is City Council has tabled this until, do we know when, Peggy, when City Council
I don't have a date yet.
Okay, so City Council is still considering. There's a lot of input still to come on this. I promise we will keep covering it, and I hope that if we do that, we have enough, give each other enough time to at least talk this out. And
people are happy in the size apartments they have. I've never heard that as a problem.
I want to thank Peggy Hill, the CEO of Rochester Management, for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you for being here, and I hope you come back.
Thank you.
Miriam Zinter, always nice to see you. Thank
always
you for being
great
here.
To see you, Evan.
Lee Sengbush from Cobbsville Village Tenants Association, nice meeting you. Thank you for being here, Lee. And Richard Rosen, nice to see you in person. Thank you for being here as well. More connections coming up.